And we welcome you to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, Terrell Wellman, Queen of Cardinal Twitter. Sally, maybe it seems like that this week. Terrell Wellman on Twitter, Birds on the Black, Bird Seats, all that good stuff. Cardinals, well, you know, we so often get in here and say, well, you know, we're waiting on the Cardinals to do something. They did something this week. They did something kind of big. They went out and got them a first baseman by the name of Paul Goldschmidt, trading off Carson Kelly, Luke Weaver, and Andy Young, and a conditional draft pick. For 1 year of Paul Goldschmidt, I guess that's probably about as the best that you could hope for. In the Cardinals' point of view, I mean, they get a really, really, really good player for fairly, really low cost.
Yeah, I mean, I had heard so many names swirling around in relation to this trade. I mean, everything from just Carson Kelly to some combination of Dakota Hudson, Austin Gomber, and Colton Wong, which I'm saying it out loud is still the most absurd thing I've ever heard. But yeah, to see those names finally come out, my first reaction was, that's it? But when you look at it a little bit more, and I keep sort of reiterating that the way I think both Cardinals fans and Diamondbacks fans can look at this trade is that the Cardinals traded from a position of strength, and maybe not strength, but of redundancy, in that these were guys that didn't have a lot of value at this point for the Cardinals moving forward, but they can still have value on a major league roster, and that's what Arizona needs, especially when you're talking about very cost controlled value at that point. So I still think there's a very high upside for Luke Weaver. I'm very curious to see how Carson Kelly does when he's not living under the boulder that is Yadier Molina's career. And neither one of those guys was irreplaceable for St. Louis. And in fact, particularly with Carson Kelly, there was just no path forward for him in the Cardinals organization. So to find a place that wants that defense first catcher, that is willing to, you know, work with him offensively, but also not put as much pressure on that and let him do what he does best pretty immediately at the major league level, is in my mind the perfect scenario for Carson Kelly. Now, Luke Weaver is going to be a little bit of an interesting project in that, you know, he really found himself in a tough spot last year, and he just kind of got stuck without having the command that he needs. And he's not ever going to be a guy that will overpower you. So if he doesn't have the command, then he's going to struggle. It'll be interesting to see him pitch in Arizona. I was talking to John Gambadoro, a sports radio host in Arizona last week, and he was saying, you know, it's not the easiest place in the world to pitch. But it's actually that might have been Craig Mish that said that. Sorry, mixing up. I want to credit the right person.
Yeah, talk didn't about do humble that on purpose.
I promise I didn't do that on purpose. I talked to both of them within a span of about 27 hours, so it all kind of runs together. But no, the point is, Chase isn't the greatest pitcher's park, so if Luke Weaver's going to struggle, you'll see it very clearly. But the Diamondbacks seem like they're pretty convinced they can work with him, and that they can sort of refine some of what we saw as the raw potential of Luke Weaver, and that's really exciting. I'm leaving out Andy Young just because I feel like he's the sort of lesser-known commodity of that trade, but certainly a guy that our own Kyle Reese thinks is very close to major league ready. And that's, again, what the Diamondbacks need. It's not what the Cardinals need. They don't need another near MLB ready middle infielder, but the Diamondbacks do. So as much as it might seem a little underwhelming, I feel like any trade for Paul Goldschmidt that doesn't return, you know, some superstar quality player is going to feel a little underwhelming, but both teams got the value that they needed for 2019. And that's what to me makes it a good trade on both sides.
Yeah. I mean, again, the biggest thing is you're not trading for Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, you are obviously, but you're not trading for this whole, you know, legendary body of work that is Paul Goldschmidt. You're trading for 1 year of this guy, and 1 year is only going to be worth so much. I mean, if you look at it in that regard, to give up all these players that are going to be coming back for much, much longer, you know, that's saying something. And you're right. I mean, they get a chance to get these guys in the majors. They get a chance to develop them when they're not necessarily expected to win, which is another thing that these guys had to deal with in St. Louis, is that expectation of needing to win all the time. And that's why, one of the reasons why Carson Kelly can't play 2 or 3 weeks in a row, because one, Yadier Molina won't let him, but two, the Cardinals are trying to win, and Yadier Molina gives them a better chance to win. I mean, that's the way it is. Yeah. Until you get, it's kind of that catch 22, no pun intended, of how do you get experience without, you know, and without, in a time when you're trying to win. So it's difficult. So yeah, I think he'll be good. Somebody pointed out something of the fact that Luke Weaver gets to, you know, may get a chance to work with Dan Herron, who also did not necessarily have overpowering things. I mean, his Twitter handle is iThrow88. But obviously had very good success, not only in, you know, Major Leagues, but also in Arizona. I hope that all these guys succeed for the Diamondbacks. I don't think anybody is going to, even at their best, even if Carson Kelly turns into an all-star catcher, I just don't think anybody's going to regret that he's not a Cardinal. Just because of how things are, you know. So that's a good thing too. They're not necessarily trading an Alex Reyes or something like that, even at a low point in his value, and then to see him bounce back and like, man, we could really use that guy. I just don't think Carson Kelly and Luke Weaver, as good as they are going to be that. So You've got a superstar in the middle of the lineup, at least for a year. The Cardinals, in typical Cardinal fashion, can do this while lowering their payroll overall, because they still haven't seemed to make up the cut of pay that Adam Wainwright's going to take, much less the fact that Bud Norris and Greg Holland are completely off the books. But, boy, I mean, you put that in there. Now, let's, you know, again, it felt like a lot of us, and I'm not saying that was immune to this, you know, immediately tried to go to the next thing. But I don't know that we have had a really good chance to sit and think about, you know, what this means. A guy that hits 30-something home runs, a guy that, you know, can steal 10 or 15 bases a year, which is kind of crazy to think, just as big as he is. A guy that's going to hit 280, 290. He's going to be, assuming health, assuming something, you know, he's what he usually is, he's going to be that rock in the lineup that the Cardinals really haven't had since, what, maybe Matt Holliday, you know, and not even the last couple years of Matt Holliday. They really needed that focal point, that fear factor, as we've talked about for years. And, you know, they kind of have that now in Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah, you know, there was a little bit of John Mozeliak feeling pretty good about himself in the press conference the other day, but as he should. I mean, this was a big get for the Cardinals. I realize it's 1 year, and I realize that we're probably sitting here a year from now having many of these same conversations about where the Cardinals go from here. But look, the Cardinals had to do something that made them better now. And there are a lot of ways you can do that. There are a lot of options out there this year. But one thing that they knew they could do, and they could get it done, and it, like we just talked about, the fact that it cost them things that they weren't going to use anyway. this was a really, really good move on the part of John Mozeliak and Mike Gersh, whatever role he actually plays in those conversations at this point. But this is the guy, this is the big bat that they have been on the hunt for the last couple of years. There's no doubt about it. This is the kind of pop, this is the kind of consistency and the track record, mind you, that allows you to really believe that this can change the dynamic of the lineup. Now, I think where it gets a little tricky is the fact that it's a rental at this point. And yes, the Cardinals could work out a deal and get him to sign an extension before the end of the season. That's certainly something we've seen them do before. You mentioned Matt Holliday. But he's not the only one. You know, Roland did it. Mark McGwire did it. You know, that's kind of this thing that the Cardinals think they're really good at doing. And yes, it's worked out. It also hasn't always worked out, to be clear. But there's certainly that possibility. I think it gets a little weird when you're talking about the point of his career that Goldschmidt is in versus a younger player that may be on the market. That gets a little complicated. So there are a lot of ways that you can look at this move and say, well, okay, yeah, but at the same time, this is the guy that the Cardinals have won. I mean, you can't watch that press conference or hear any of the quotes from Paul Goldschmidt and not think that he's like the most cardinally cardinal of all time. I mean, he had to be at the top of their list for a reason, because he's everything that the Cardinals want their players to be, including, you know, veterans.
Yeah, this is true. Now, everybody points it, and that is, that's been in this whole thing. I know Jennifer Langhoff was written in their stories. Everybody's written in their stories about how the Cardinals have done this, you know, traded for a player and have them sign. But the last guy that did that was Matt Holliday, 2009. And also, I think sometimes we forget, Matt Holliday went to free agency and didn't sign until January. So as much as he likes St. Louis, he didn't like it enough to, you know, lock it up quickly.
Gotta make their money, man.
Well, that's right. And that's the thing. Another thing. But then you've got, you know, Roland 2002, Edmonds in, you know, 2000, Mark McGwire in 1997. I mean, you're looking 20-something years. It's not like this is a thing that has worked in the last decade on a regular basis. Now, there haven't been necessarily a lot of chances to. Jason Hayward is probably the only one that we can think of that there was that opportunity for. But it is, you know, baseball is somewhat different now. And, you know, I was listening to somebody talking to an Arizona guy. And, you know, he pointed out, you know, that Gambo pointed out that Paul Goldschmidt left a lot of money on the table last time when he signed with Arizona. He's 31, going to be 32, I guess, at the end of next year. This is probably his last chance to cash in. It feels like it's very, I don't know, I'm not going to say it's very unlikely, because it does sound like he's a guy that might, you know, fall in love with St. Louis and decide to sign. But it feels to me like, you know, if I'm him, I'm going to free agency and seeing what I've got, because it's my last chance to really have that experience. And if that's the case, and if some, you know, some other people decide to get exciting with their bidding, the Cardinals could be out Marcelo Ozuna, they could be out Michael Wacha, they could be out Paul Goldschmidt. You know, you could have one year closer to losing Yadier Molina or Matt Carpenter. There's a lot of focus on this coming year, because things could get a little bit dicey afterwards.
Yeah, I think so. Not to jump past the 2019 season, right, completely, but I'm going to be so interested in what happens with both the Bryce Harper and Manny Machado contracts as far as the years that they do get, as well as what you're looking at for a realistic contract for a guy like Paul Goldschmidt. Because, look, baseball as a whole is sort of wising up to this whole length of contract thing. Not that it's ever been completely, you know, out of the view of these teams that sign these long contracts, but we've seen sort of the end of some of these long contracts now, right? And you see these guys fade very quickly at the end of their careers. There's also one of the things about having a lot more data available is that you can apply it in a lot of ways, and you can look at guys after they're 33, 34, 35, 36 years old and see that they're not, you know, $30 million a year players. So it'll be very interesting to me to see what kind of contract can be structured for a guy like Goldschmidt. You mentioned Gambo. He was talking, you know, maybe a 3 or 4 year deal is ultimately what you can sell Goldschmidt on after the end of the season, as to, opposed to a 5 or a 6 or a 7 year deal, because of the point in his career that he's in. He's just in, I mean, that contract, this last contract that he's been on with with Atlanta really sucked up all of those really prime years for him, which is why you look at a guy like Bryce Harper and think, man, you're going to get the really prime years of Bryce Harper out of this contract, and that's what makes it so appealing, as opposed to a guy like Goldschmidt where you're thinking, okay, he's been an absolute stud for the last 5 years, but what's that going to look like another 5 years from now? Well, then you're looking at the end of what would be a 10-year Bryce Harper contract as far as where he is in his career. So it's, like I said, not to fast forward through all of 2019, because I think I'm going to really enjoy watching Paul Goldschmidt play baseball in St. Louis, and I'm very much looking forward to that. But it does set up a weird sort of sequence of events that will take place later in the season, or, you know, after the season concludes, that you know, the Cardinals may have to get a little uncomfortable to go there, whether it's Paul Goldschmidt or anybody else at that point.
Well, and speaking of uncomfort, let's go ahead and shift a little bit into what this, you know, they got Paul Goldschmidt, but then kind of immediately came out and said through their, I don't want to say through their media representatives, but they kind of let it be known through the media that Bryce Harper is, well, not completely off the table. He's kind of like right on the edge to where if a cat was there, he could just bop it right off. And that's what's really weird, because I'm looking at, I think it was an article by Derek Gould in the Post-Dispatch, and he's writing an article and he's saying something about the fact that the Cardinals might feel more comfortable with a 5-year deal with Goldschmidt rather than a 10-year deal with Bryce Harper because of, and I'm linking, they're going to end at, like you were saying, they're going to end at the same time. What does it matter? I mean, you know, by the time you get to 31, 32 with Bryce Harper, it's a 5-year deal from that point forward. And that's assuming, you know, we're looking at opt-outs, as you know, they're going to be in there, other things like that. So I haven't quite figured out. I mean, the Cardinals get and talk about needing a left-handed bat and needing a face of the franchise and needing all this other stuff. And yet, they can kind of, you know, immediately put Bryce Harper on the back burner. Now, you know, looking at some of this right now, there's, I'm looking at MLB trade rumors, and one scout says it's just Philadelphia bidding against Philadelphia, which maybe that's the case. Maybe it's, that market is shrinking, and maybe with the market shrinks that they can do something creative with a, you know, a 7-year deal that's more money or something like that. But for the most part, it just, it feels, and again, they know more than we do. They're smarter at this stuff than we are. But looking at it from our point of view, it looks like they're being short-sighted, going for a guy in his 30s and not looking at the guy that is 26 and, as you say, has the prime of his career in front of him.
Here's my theory. You always love when I say that.
I love your theories, yeah.
John Mozeliak has always wanted to be the mystery team.
Ah.
So he's setting himself up to be the mystery team that swoops in at the end and signs Bryce Harper. That's my theory.
John Mozeliak is the man of mystery, of course.
No, but I think, you know, I mean, there are a lot of, I've been a part of so many conversations about Bryce Harper in the last week that I can't imagine, you know, running across a theory other than that one that I just proposed. I haven't heard anyone say that. I'm not going to lie. Maybe that's because only I come up with such ridiculous theories. But I've heard so many things, and I can find truth in just about all of them. I think what we may not want to acknowledge is that, look, Bryce Harper is not the most cardinally cardinal of all time. And the Cardinals might be more willing to go out on a limb to put all their eggs in a basket for a guy like Paul Goldschmidt as opposed to a guy like Bryce Harper. I think that is a terrible way to do business when your product is supposedly to be winning baseball, but I think there's something, you hear the way that they talk about Paul Goldschmidt and the way that they did at the press conference and how nothing, no one had a single bad thing to say about him. And you know, the comparisons came up relatively quickly to guys like Holiday or guys like, you know, the way Chris Carpenter talked about St. Louis. I don't know that I see that comparison quite so much. There's a little more quietness about Mr. Goldschmidt. But the way they talk about him makes it seem like that part of who Goldschmidt is was really important to them in choosing to pursue this option. Now, it's easy to say that when you're sitting in front of a room of reporters who you're trying to impress with this new signing. I get that. Just like anything else they say this time of year, you sort of take it all at face value with a giant heap of salt. Much like John Mozeliak saying that it's highly probable that they have their starting eight already on the 40-man roster. That's great. He left a lot of wiggle room in everything that he said on Friday regarding questions specifically asked about Bryce Harper without ever naming Bryce Harper. So he did the sort of classic Mozeliak thing that makes it sound like they're out, even though he never actually said that they're out, and left some room so that he can be truthful in saying, yes, the odds are much better that this is our starting eight as opposed to a starting eight with Bryce Harper in it. So he was honest in what he said. I think they would prefer someone with the persona, with the sort of quiet leadership of Paul Goldschmidt to the flash of Bryce Harper. While that doesn't mean they won't go there, I don't think we can really undersell how much that matters to the guys that make the decisions for this team.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
I'm not saying it's a good thing.
No, you're right. And it's interesting because it feels like we've been hearing that the Cardinals are trying to change their mindset, that they're trying to, because they've missed the playoffs 3 years in a row, because they've been on a downhill slide through, you know, probably part of the way through 2015. You know, they, you know, when the last time you played in the playoffs, you were playing the Cubs and didn't win, has to kind of, you know, still sit badly with you. And, you know, the whole idea that if you keep doing the same things, it's not necessarily going to get you back to where you were. But then you look at, yeah, Paul Goldschmidt is a great move, a wonderful move, but still the kind of move that you would expect the Cardinals to make. Going after Bryce Harper is not. And it just feels like that might shake the paradigm a little bit, and in a good way. You know, it's... What worries me, you know, there was a lot. Derek Gould basically said in one of his chats that if Nolan Arredondo was available, he would shoot to the top of the Cardinals' charts. Part of me is afraid that they're playing for next year, hoping that he hits the free agent market and they can bid for him, although then they would probably not re-sign Goldschmidt because you got to have a place for Matt Carpenter to play. But... and my fear is, you know, Arredondo will sign with the Rockies, you know, an extension, or sign with somebody else. Paul Goldschmidt will go, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got nothing. You know, you're holding an empty bag. I mean, the Cardinals are better than that, and they plan better than that. But that's kind of that worry, that they're focused on something that might happen instead of taking advantage to a, you know, a once in a lifetime opportunity. If you want to be, I mean, maybe that's exaggerating a little bit, but 26 year old guys that have already won an MVP and don't come on the market very often. I mean, 26 year olds period don't usually come on to the free agent market, much less ones as talented as Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, who again the Cardinals have never been tied to, and again, like you said, doesn't necessarily have the personality or temperament that the Cardinals would probably want, even though they had this big, huge hole at third base, in theory. So I don't know. I feel, again, it's very hard to convince me, and I'm one that tends to take front offices, you know, point of view pretty seriously, but it's very difficult for them to convince me that that's not the play that you should be making. You add a Goldschmidt, you add a Harper, because Goldschmidt, he improves his team, but I don't know that, I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Does the addition of Goldschmidt right now mean the Cardinals are the favorite in the NL Central? Because I'm not sure it does.
Not until they have a bullpen that can get outs consistently. But that's not a Paul Goldschmidt thing. I think Paul Goldschmidt does a lot for the middle of their lineup. I think it does a lot for the rest of the guys in the lineup because of the protection that he provides. I think it'll be, you know, Mike Schilt is going to be under no small microscope, let's say, with the way that he builds these lineups, with the way that he utilizes the players that he has to work with, and particularly the way that he utilizes that pitching staff, because it has been such a, I was trying to find a softer way to say train wreck, but train wreck for the last handful of years. But until the Cardinals have pitchers in the bullpen, particularly from the left side and at the end of games, that can get guys out consistently, then no, it doesn't, you know, Paul Goldschmidt alone doesn't vault them to being a favorite. Now, I think they're closer to being a contender for that top spot than they were 5 days ago without Paul Goldschmidt. But I think, you know, the Cardinals were looking up at two teams at the end of the year. So one guy, as good as Paul Goldschmidt is, and I want to be very clear, I'm really excited to see Paul Goldschmidt play baseball for 162 games. I'm really excited about that because he is a tremendous baseball player. And I have been not so secretly jealous of Arizona for years that they had the privilege of watching Paul Goldschmidt every night. So I can't really overstate that either. But the Cardinals still have work to do to make themselves... Maybe they took one step, but they were looking up at two teams. So they still need to take another step, whether that's another bat in the lineup or just that security of your pitching staff with the wealth of talent they have. It's got to be more consistent, or, you know, you're going to have to hope they score 14 runs a game in order to take advantage of the NL Central, which is a thing that Paul Goldschmidt does very well, mind you.
Yes, although he doesn't understand how, and just kind of weird, and all right. Just because, yeah. You know, far be it from Paul Goldschmidt to give us a quote, right? I think it's interesting. Now, the Cardinals, we're running a little long, but, you know, you trade for a superstar, these thing kind of shows are going to go a little longer. Cardinals are in Las Vegas now, or at least some of them are, the people in charge, at least. And their shopping list is apparently, a lefty for the bullpen, a lefty bat on the bench utility guy, and a backup catcher, which... Very well, maybe Francisco Pena, but he liked.
They're just going to change that date back on the transaction list and make it just like they meant it.
Yeah, well, that's what I figured is they were just prepping it and forgot to change the date. But
right.
You know, there's been talk of Daniel Descalzo returning to St. Louis. I don't know. I know that Dirty Dan has gained a little power and stuff like that, but it's still hard to shake that reputation or that image that we had when he was a Cardinal of, well, Greg Garcia, who we just lost, you know, that kind of thing. Is Daniel coming back? It feels like it's trying to be old home weight because we hear rumors of Daniel Descalzo, and then we hear rumors of Shelby Miller getting a minor league deal or something of that nature. But is going with Descalzo maybe the best way to do that utility guy thing?
I mean, they did bring Matt Adams back last year. Also true. So they're not above some nostalgia. No, I mean, I think what Descalzo has done to sort of resurrect his career has been pretty fascinating and quite impressive. Yes, he has found some power. I'm not sure quite where he fits in. Because to your point, the Cardinals had Greg Garcia that did what he mostly does. Maybe Descalzo has a little more power. But again, hitting a bush is going to be a little bit different than hitting in Arizona. Right. But I don't think it's the worst thing they could do. I'm not sure that it dramatically improves them. And at this point, it feels like the Cardinals, yes, they have Paul Goldschmidt, but I'm not sure other horizontal moves are really beneficial at this point. So I love me some Danny D, but he's... it's an option. I don't know that it really impresses me much.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, you look at this and it's like, if you get somebody like that, you're probably going to have to, I mean, it feels like Jed Jerko or Jose Martinez is not going to be on this team anyway. I mean, it feels like one of those guys is going to get traded, but, you know, maybe it's both of them. If you bring in a middle infielder, and honestly, you know, Jed Jerko brings you pretty much everything that Daniel Descalzo does, except he doesn't bat left-handed. And I think I'd rather have a guy that hits right-handed and actually hits versus, you know, a guy that hits left-handed and doesn't. You know, Descalzo's 230 average over the last 2 years is a little... I mean, I know there's more to it than that. I mean, he's hit 23 home runs over the last 2 years, too, so you'd like that better than that. But, you know, for a guy that's going to be coming in as a spot starter and a pinch hitter and things of that nature... you'd like to think they could do a little bit more, because, I mean, and that gets us back to some of what we discussed earlier. The Cardinals come into after the signing of or the trade for Goldschmidt, and say they have plenty of payroll flexibility, you know, but, you know, if you're spending it on a bench bat and a lefty and the bullpen, do you really need that? I mean, those guys shouldn't cost you a ton of money. We've seen what happens when they spend a whole lot of money on a reliever.
Yeah, there's a very strange disconnect happening with what the Cardinals are saying and then what they're saying next. Right. Whether it's, no, I think we're good with where we're at, but we're going to keep our options open, or sure, we've got money to spend. It just, there's a disconnect there, and I'm not quite sure what it means as far as what they're... what they're hoping to actually do this week at winter meetings or even beyond then. I know Mo made it very clear that the offseason doesn't end when the winter meetings conclude, so they don't feel like they have to be finished at that point. Again, it seems to me like he left open every possibility for them to continue to stay in on a guy like Bryce Harper without being all in on a guy like Bryce Harper, and that's an interesting position to be in. I think there's a lot of kind of cat and mouse going on with what GM says they're interested and what GM says they're not. And we've all heard it this week. Bryce Harper and Scott Boras are going to meet with anybody who wants to meet with them, and they're going to put their little piece of paper with a price tag on the table, and anyone who's willing to, you know, reach across and flip it over to see what the number actually is going to be in the conversation. So the Cardinals have every opportunity that anyone else does at this point. It just is a matter of, you know, how they want to view this long-term picture. Is it the very, I agree with you, very, very risky play of trying to wait it out for Nolan Arenado? Or do you go ahead and make that move because right now you can, you 100% can, and set yourself up not only for a great 2019, but then, you know, you have that security blanket, if you will, of Bryce Harper for the next 7 or 8 years or whatever it is. So, their to-do list seems pretty innocuous, but with some very, very seemingly deliberate vagueness to what else they could choose to pursue. So I don't know that we're any more in the know now after Paul Goldschmidt than we were before they made the trade.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, they know, they have a bigger picture, they have more information, they know more about what they're trying to do than we do, but, you know, from the outside looking in, it feels like, yeah, there's some strange mixed signals and, you know, ideas that are going on that we don't necessarily quite understand, but, you know, all we can do is get to, you know, play it day by day, if you will, and then get to spring training and see what they've actually done, and then critique and go from there. And again, like you said, you get Paul Goldschmidt for 162 games, and basically 162 games. The guy doesn't miss much.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you have a healthy Ozuna that could hit some, and Matt Carpenter that remembers that it's a full season and not just a chunk in the middle, a Dexter Fowler that comes back, assuming you don't get a Bryce Harper. Yeah, this is going to be a very interesting team. That could put up the 14 runs a game that they need to win these things. You know, you gotta be kind of excited about 2019, no matter who's going to be there, just because of this move. And, you know, hopefully there's more that's coming. Before we wrap it, and we will try, although I know Tara is very busy next week, so I don't know if we'll get a chance to do a show after winter meetings or not. We may try. But before we wrap this week, we probably ought to mention that the fact that tonight Lee Smith was elected to the Hall of Fame through one of the veterans committees, I believe. And while, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, I don't know if they've announced yet how Lee Smith goes into the Hall of Fame, whether he goes in as a Cub or a Cardinal or whatever. It's, you know, he's made his impact in 4 years in St. Louis, and is at least remembered by most Cardinal fans very fondly as the guy that, you know, came in and shut the door in the ninth, and occasionally in the eighth and ninth, I think, as for a Cardinal. So it's kind of nice to have a little bit more Cardinal representation in Cooperstown.
Of course, always is nice to see some of that legend continue and find its way all the way to the Hall of Fame. I do think I saw on the internet, so take it for what it will, that he said he would go in as a Cub. Based on the number of years he spent in Chicago, I'm sure that makes sense. But yes, it was Jeff Jones on Twitter tweeting, because that's what you do on Twitter, that Smith said Chicago on a conference call tonight. So that appears to be the decision. But yeah, it's always good to see that connection and that legacy continue. And of course, we all know that's something that's very valued and appreciated in St. Louis by both the organization itself and the fans.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I guess that means if he's going in as a Cub, we don't have to worry about them retiring his number in St. Louis, which was 47, I believe. 48.
Good thing it wasn't 46.
Yeah,
you know, then
it's like
now.
Man, Paul, sorry, we got to take that back. Yeah, so you know, 47 is he wore for the Cardinals in 4 years. Seems unlikely they'll have to worry about that, but I'm sure they'll be doing some honoring of him next season at the ballpark. Maybe he'll get a bobblehead or something like that. We'll have to wait and see. So, anyway, congratulations to Lee Smith, who has a great middle name, that's all I know. So, until next time, whenever that next time will be, I am Daniel, and that's Tara. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.